All right, good morning. Welcome to the session on Agile methodologies. My name is Venkat Subramaniam. We're going to talk about different methodologies and practices and understand, you know, what methodologies we may apply to software projects. So let's get started. The best time to ask question is when you have it, so don't wait till the end. Of course, I may not be able to see you very clearly, so wave at me or, you know, scream at me, and I'll get your attention. I'll answer your questions. So let's start with what is agility? So I looked up the dictionary and, you know, find out what agility is. And what I found out was it said it's being agile. That didn't help a whole lot, right? So what is agile in that case then? And it says that it's marked by the ability to move with quick ease and grace and about being very resourceful. So for whatever reason that the quickness is involved in it, being resourceful is involved in it, why do we really need to be doing that? What does this mean to us? So, you know, there's a saying that it's very hard to turn around a big ship. When we are dealing with applications, the only constant is change. We constantly have to change based on how the business needs evolve around us. And if we are not able to make the changes and stay relevant to what software we're trying to build, it's pretty pointless to build applications. In one of the research studies, it shows that only about 7%, that's seven single letter, 7% of features we build actually is used by our customers. That is extremely sad. If we are spending an year developing applications, imagine how little of our year-long effort actually is being used by our customers once we develop the application. So we need to build something that's relevant. The second thing is, how do we go about designing and developing software and make sure it's relevant and functioning? That's very important. So we need to kind of look towards a process that helps us in achieving the success. So we're looking for a process that is lightweight, so it's easier to turn around and make changes, and one that is sufficient. Sufficiency is extremely important. There's a point of diminishing return for everything we do. And the minute we, you know, across this point of diminishing return, we don't get benefit from what we do, and our effort really doesn't pay off. So sufficiency is another thing we need to focus on in developing applications. So we need to, you know, think about this agility and how we can be agile in developing applications. Let's talk about software development. It's a relatively nascent field compared to all the other activities of human endeavor. And machines definitely are getting faster, but are we getting more or better in developing and delivering applications? You know, look at all the advances we have had in technology and computers. Are we really, have we made such advances in our success to develop and deliver applications is a question we need to think about. Now, if you think about the success rate in developing software, Capers-Jones has a study in which he analyzes large software applications, and he finds that only 10% of software projects were successful. Of course, he defines the word success as delivering applications on time, within budget, with reasonable functionality, and it functions and doesn't have as many bugs. The minute I mention it, some people question, is that a reasonable expectation? I mean, I think that's pretty reasonable to expect that a software that you develop actually meets the needs, functions, and you deliver on time and budget. Now, think about this for a second. If you're building a house, and the builder tells you, look around, you see 90 fallen houses and 10 of them are standing, all of them, I did it, would you be confident building a house? If you're trying to take an airplane out and the airline tells you that out of 100 flights that left, only 10 of them landed, would you take a flight today? Yet we keep repeatedly investing money into software development. What other human activity has such an abysmal success rate and we have decided to put up with it? Politics, right? No other field will we accept such low level of success rate and be, you know, willing to put up with it. So we need to do something about this and see how we can modify and change around and say, hey, I want to succeed in developing software. How can I do that? So why is it so hard to get this right? Well, let's talk about software engineering. So I looked up dictionary again to find out what engineering is. It says the application of science and mathematics by which the properties of matter and the source of energy in nature are made useful to people. How much of that really fits into what we do as software developers when we develop applications? So is software development really engineering? Well, there's a debate about this, and there's a twisted definition of this where it says the design and manufacture of complex products becomes software engineering. Well, software engineering was coined in 1968 by a group of people who were desperate to succeed. And what do you do when you're desperate? You try anything and everything you can possibly try. So by emphasizing this word, software engineering, they wanted to bring a lot of emphasis on following a certain set of procedures and standards. After all, engineers do that and they are successful. So if we do it, why can't we be successful? Well, unfortunately, we cannot just replicate what somebody else does and be successful with it. We got to figure out what works and what doesn't work. As human endeavor, we have taken time to make mistakes and learn in almost everything we did. In 400 BC, Chinese figured out that you can take something heavier than air and make it fly. It took us several centuries before we started complaining about airline food. So it takes a lot of time for us to be able to succeed in what we do, and success doesn't come just because we want to try. We have to learn, we have to make mistakes. So I think we are in a very nascent field where we are in the process of making mistakes, and we need to do that. But it's okay to make mistakes, but it's important to learn from them, and that's why it's extremely important for us to be open and being receptive in finding out what solutions are there and not be pedantic about a solution that's been handed down to us by somebody. So in terms of developing software itself, software engineering, we oftentimes have a clear distinction between a design phase and a construction phase. In the case of software, that changes quite a bit. It is very cheap to compile software. It's very cheap to deploy applications. So our design and development is combined to phase. So a lot of things that apply to engineering don't quite directly translate to developing software applications. So we need to kind of tune to it. If you ask how much time it'll take for me to produce 10,000 copies of my cell phone, I can pretty much tell you exactly how much time and money I needed. But if you ask how much time it took to develop the first commercial cell phone, surprisingly, it took 37 years. So innovation cannot be time-boxed so easily. The question we need to ask is, what is software development? Is it manufacturing? Is it predictive manufacturing? Or is it a very innovative process that we are trying to build? So we need to ask ourselves, how can we be in this software development approach where it is very highly innovative? How many times have you built an application and you demo or show a window or a form or whatever it is to the users, and the minute they sit down and start looking at it, they have like 20 changes you can make. And you say, well, wait a second, you just asked me to build this, I just built it. But seeing it prompts a lot of thought process in them, and they want to do better than it, and they want a lot of these changes. So, in fact, I will challenge you to think about this. If your objective is to build what the customers wanted, you will fail. You need to try to build what the customers will want. So it is our job to actually take what they want and constantly figure out what is it that they would be wanting. And that is exactly what we're trying to do in agile development, is not to go with a static understanding of what they wanted, but a very dynamic understanding of how it evolves. If your customers give you the requirements, and just like this, you know, in Men in Black, you take basically a little point at them and say, look over here, press a button, and you freeze them for the next 3 years. You can go off and build your software application, come back and say, ta-da, how do you look, you know, look at this, how do you like it? Of course, you would have met their requirements. However, on the other hand, unfortunately, your customers are human beings too. They keep thinking, they keep evolving, they keep understanding various things, and they are innovating and refining their thoughts as well. So it's very important to meet what they want and not just meet what they wanted. So how do we go about doing just that is the concern. So in developing applications, we have the waterfall approach. Of course, there are three kinds of people out there, or organizations out there. Those that do waterfall, and they know it, I think those are the courageous ones. Those who do waterfall and they are in denial and they think they are not doing it. And those that clearly have understood they are doing waterfall and they are trying to change how they do it. Now, waterfall, as we know it, is very ineffective. We go through a requirements phase, an analysis phase, a design phase, and an implementation phase, and then maybe, if you're lucky, a testing phase, right? Now, why is waterfall such a bad idea? Because it expects to a certain degree that each phase is complete, and then you can carry on that to the next level. Well, waterfall is probably the most active, popularly used methodology out there, even though most of us would agree that it's not very effective. So we need to blame somebody for waterfall. Whom do we blame? When we can't figure out whom to blame, let's blame the government. right? We always do that, right? Well, actually, the government probably was very instrumental in helping us drive this way, because by delegating these tasks to different vendors, it becomes very easy for bidding and planning purposes. So one of the nice things about waterfall is it's very simple to plan, but it's very ineffective in actual development. In fact, Winston Royce, who is the author of Waterfall, in the last page, he actually mentioned that this is supposed to be very highly iterative and incremental, but I guess nobody got to reading the last page of the document, and we kind of totally misunderstood what Waterfall is all along. So one of the challenges is to develop the software and stay relevant in developing the software. How do we go about doing it? So I will challenge you with this. Show me a long project, and I will show you a project that's already doomed. I have actually personally worked on projects that were 10 years long, $10 million long in cost, and it just went down the drain because the features that it developed was totally irrelevant. The customers didn't care about it, and we just spent time and effort building it, and there was no benefit whatsoever. I've also fortunately worked on projects that have been successful. And if you ask what are some of the reasons why software succeed and what are some of the reasons why they fail, you can look at a common theme or pattern of a presence of certain things that lead to success or a lack of certain things that actually lead to failure, and we need to understand it. So this takes us to the iterative and incremental approach. Back when I was in school, I was asked by a professor in my numerical analysis course to track the trajectory of a spacecraft. So I wrote my code and I executed it. And when I ran the application, it said that the spacecraft is way over there in the left. When I looked at the solution, I was shocked to find that actually the correct position is way far away, several miles away in the space. So when I looked at it, well, why did it go wrong? Did I make mistakes in calculation? I went back and reviewed my code, and everything was right. So I was trying to figure out what went wrong, and two thoughts went through my mind. The first one is, thank goodness I don't work for NASA, right? The second thing that went through my mind is, what kind of calculation mistakes have I made? And eventually what I found out was my equations were right, my program was correct, but what I had to do was I had to rerun this program, but I had to lower the delta t, the time difference in my differential equation to calculate this. So when I lowered the time, the more I lowered it, the more I was closer to the actual position of the spacecraft. I graduated from school, didn't think about this for a long time. Then I noticed a simile between this and software projects we develop. The longer we take from the time we get the requirements and get their feedback, the farther away we are from the realities of what we're trying to develop and deliver. So it's important for us to deliver what is relevant, so we need to shorten this time between taking the requirements and going and getting an active feedback. And when I say feedback, it is not showing them a picture or a diagram, but it is actually showing them the real application. And agile methodologies generally say that you need to demo your application. I beg to differ. That is just not adequate. I emphasize it's got to be a combination of demo and exercising. Put out your application on a staging server. Let them use it. You cannot get any better feedback than when they actually actively start using your application, clearly knowing that it's not a production system, clearly knowing it's not complete, but they can give you the active feedback using it. So demoing and exercising is very important, and having that interval very short is very critical. So the question is, how do we go about achieving this shorter iterative development in our application to be effective with it? So one of the questions you may ask from this is, hey, wait a minute, when you ran the application, the numerical computation, did it not take you longer to run when you lowered the delta t? You're absolutely right. It took the program much longer to run. Aha, that would mean that this program will take much more longer time to develop, isn't it, if I use iterative and incremental development. Well, it is certainly true that it may take a bit longer than going brute force and developing it, but then let's ask ourselves, do you want to take a little longer, possibly, and develop something that's relevant, or do you want to take a very short amount of time, hypothetically, and develop something totally irrelevant and hard to maintain and keep up with? So the question is, we need to be very careful about the time that we take. Unfortunately, one of the constraints we are facing every day is that project planning doesn't take a lot of these things into account. One of the typical things I'm sure you have faced is somebody calls you, like I was called on a project, they say, hey, we got a project for you to work on. I say, that's great, what can you tell me about the project? And then they say, well, the project is due on November the 1st. Well, that's good to know. What else can you tell me about the project? Well, if you don't finish on November 1st, we are doomed, right? So this is the kind of requirements and expectations that you start with on projects where a timeline is set ahead of you. Now, let's ask ourselves this question. Maybe you worked really hard on the project, which was due on November the 1st. About July the 1st, you realize this is not going to happen. So you go to the boss who is busy browsing the web, and you say, hey, you know, this deadline, yeah? Are we really serious about it? He takes a pause, stares at you, and says, go back to your desk and get your work done, right? So you go back and, you know, you soldier your way through it. Now, what happened? Maybe you just went ahead and released something on or around the November 1st. What happened on December the 1st on that project, typically? Anyone? What's happening on December the 1st on that project? Fixing bugs, right? What happens on January the 1st? Probably fixing more bugs. Have you worked on projects where we fix bugs about 2 or 3 or even 6 months after the so-called delivery date? If we do that, let's stop and think about this. Isn't that hypocrisy that we actually put so much emphasis on that deadline, push a binary out, and then spend several months going back and fixing it? In fact, I will give you a suggestion. Here's something you could try on your projects. But before you try it, I recommend that you have your resume written up. What I would recommend is name Notepad into your application.exe. Just release it. What's going to happen? They're going to run it and say, well, you delivered on time, but it doesn't function. Cool. Well, you still made it on time, right? Of course, I'm being too extreme in saying that. But the point I want to emphasize is it's not important to deliver the software on time. It's important to deliver what is relevant and what actually works. We need to be very careful about the quality of what we produce when we develop the software and deliver to them. That's extremely important. So question is, how do we go about doing that? And that is something that we need to pay close attention to in developing software. So we follow this iterative and evolutionary development. And one of the things we do is time boxing. To give you an example, there was a professor teaching a course on gaming theory, and he asked his class, and every semester he asked his students develop a group of students develop games. One of the semesters he invites them. On the very first day of the class, he tells them, hey guys, you have exactly 2 weeks. Remember, this is in the beginning of the semester. You got 2 weeks to develop this game that you're going to develop as a group and turn it in to me. And the students, of course, protested. What can we do in 2 weeks? He said, it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be complete. I only want you to do what you can do in 2 weeks and submit what you can. So the students work on this for 2 weeks. They submit their games, and the professor reviews what has been given. And to his pleasant surprise, the application that was developed by these students in 2 weeks was almost as capable as what students typically have developed every semester throughout the semester. Maybe the professor graduated a long time ago and doesn't remember. Students always cram everything in the last 2 weeks of the semester anyways, right? So the point is, then he goes back to them and says, you have another 2 weeks to refine this and another 2 weeks to refine it. And over the semester, he goes through a several refinement of the same application they're developing. At the end of the semester, by far, what the students developed was a lot better than what students have done in the entire past semesters that he had offered the course. Well, we can take a lot of things from that in real-life software projects as well. If you give me so much of requirement and give me 5 years to develop, I'm not going to be effective with it because 5 years is a long time away. I'm not going to put priorities on it. If you ask me what's high priority to me, it's what's going to happen tomorrow to the next 2 weeks. Anything after that is not even in my radar screen at all. So we pay attention to things that are very imminent. So rather than giving this much requirements and giving 5 years to do, narrow it down to a very small amount of requirement and maybe give them about 2 weeks to do it. And then go back and refine it in 2 weeks and refine it 2 weeks, for example, and then carry it on. And you can go back and give feedback and change the direction as to what need to be developed further while you work with it. So we need to be very, one of the important things is adaptive planning. It is not important to plan and then say that's the plan we're going to follow continuously. We need to adapt to the plan as we develop the application. So how do we go about doing adaptive planning is something we need to pay attention to. So yes, we can come up with all these estimates and deadlines way ahead of time, but the reality on the ground has to be checked very constantly. So we need to focus on succeeding on the project then, sticking with a plan that's been developed, and also developing relevant working software is extremely important to keep focus on. So given all of this, a bunch of guys in 2001 got together, and they wanted to talk about software development in general, and their theme was about lightweight software development. At the end of the 2.5 days, they were surprised to find that they had more things in common than different, and thank goodness they did not come up with a unified agile practices. They decided to stay their own way to further the development, but they decided to come up with a common theme, and that's where the Agile Manifesto came about. And one of the interesting things that it says is individuals and interaction is more important than process and tools. Working software is more important than comprehensive documentation. Customer collaboration more important than contract negotiation. And then finally, responding to change is more important than following preset of plans. Notice they're not saying that tools are not important. They're not saying documentation is not important. They're not saying contract is not important. They're saying that there's something more important than those, and so it's a difference in emphasis more than anything else. And you recognize the names over here. These are a number of people involved in a number of these practices and methodologies that are out there in today's world. And I won't go through this list completely, but I will highlight a couple of things. Look at the very first one and the focus of that. To satisfy the customer through early and continuous delivery of software system. One of the best ways to succeed in software is to integrate frequently and integrate often. So constantly integrate your application and show that to the customers and get their feedback. And you want to welcome change anytime. That's basically what agility is. And you want to deliver software very frequently. You want to be able to collaborate and work together. And people who are very highly talented and motivated do a better job than mediocre people who are not motivated and interested in developing software. And so on, we can talk about it. And the only thing I want to mention in addition to that is the word simplicity. Simplicity is extremely important. I want you to think about this when you write code. You want to build capability into your application, not complexity. A lot of times we build complexity into code, not capability into code. So if we can then build a capability into code and keep it simple, it becomes easier to maintain the code. And if we cannot easily modify the code and get a feedback, we can absolutely not be any agile at all because it is going to be very difficult to modify the code and evolve it. So no matter how our intent is to be agile, the code will not cooperate with us. So why are we interested in methodologies and practices? Because methodologies help us to communicate, understand, and do better what we are doing, so it helps us to stay focused on what we are trying to do. Now, which methodology is the right methodology for us to use? Well, I want to emphasize, no matter what methodology or practice we pick, any methodology that is dogmatic and prescriptive will fail. So we need to be able to pick methodologies, practices, and adapt to what we want to do, and that is extremely important. So if you ask me which methodology I use, I don't use any one specific methodology. I use a combination of them that actually works for my projects. And I'll talk about some of the pragmatics of this towards the end of this session. So there are a number of things we need to look at, and it's important to know what are some of the methodologies and practices out there. So I'll go through some of those and highlight some of the key features. Extreme programming, most of us are familiar with. XP is something that was developed as part of this C3 project. Some people say it failed because of XP, and some people take credit that it actually showed a positiveness of extreme programming. Well, I'll leave that to you to think about it. XP is something that is very exciting because XP brings emphasis to what actually works and tells us to do more of what actually works. There are some really, really good practices we can follow in developing software. For example, one of the things I like the most is code reviews. When we develop applications, if somebody can review the code, it is the most effective way to remove bugs from applications and stay relevant is for having a code review. But why don't people like code review? One of the reasons why people hate code review is the way that we often do it in organizations. If you get your team together on a Friday afternoon to do code review, there are three things that usually you would hear. John says, wait a minute, you guys are going to get together and bash up my code? Thank you very much, I'm not interested in it. And Sarah says, look, I'm already behind schedule. I don't want to look at stinking John's code, right? And the manager says, the last time you guys got together, you all were fighting, and so no more code review for you. Well, code review turns to be a very political process in organizations, and people don't want to do it. I found it to be extremely effective to do code review in a very tactical level. When I write code, for example, if we three are working on a project, when I finish a code, I would give it to you for review on that particular task. The next task I write, I would give it to you to review, and we kind of circulate it. It's very tactical, very low profile, and also we do it on a task level. It doesn't take a whole lot of time. Well, I cannot emphasize the benefit of code review. Well, XP says, well, if code review is so useful, why not do it all the time? And that's where the pair programming concept comes in, where a pair of developers get together and they start writing code together, and there's an instant code review, and one, you know, pair programming is not where one guy has the keyboard, the other guy has the mouse. That's not pair programming, right? Pair programming is where when one guy is writing code, the other person is actively involved in thinking through the test cases and the logic and so on, and they back and forth bounce ideas to each other. One of the things I've really enjoyed in pair programming is at the end of an 8-hour day, I'm actually more energetic than I was in the beginning of the day. The amount of energy that flows between people is just amazing when you do it. Of course, you have to match up the right type of people to do this, but it's extremely good. There are some certain values that XP emphasizes. And the values basically are core values that, and the 12 practices around it. We'll talk about that in a minute. And it really works really well for relatively smaller sized teams. We'll talk again a little bit more about it later on. It emphasizes a 2 to 3 week iteration cycle, and it greatly de-emphasizes documentation as well. So talking about the values, cost. If we are not given enough money to get the project done, we can never get it done. Sometimes too much of that is also problematic. So we got to, you know, kind of keep the cost in control and in mind. Time, we already talked about it. I gave you examples of the iterative cycle and how much time is given for us to do the job. Quality is something we cannot really compromise. We need to pay attention to developing software that is easy to maintain and extend. That's very critical. And scope, basically, you know, how much of what we want to do. And these things actually are not independent of each other. We to produce a certain amount of code with a certain quality and a certain scope takes a certain amount of time. Do not let your customers control all the three between the quality, scope, and time. If they decide the scope and quality, you need to pick the time. If they decide the time and quality, you need to pick the scope. What if your customers emphasize that they decide all the three? Then you're giving them the fourth option, which is failure. So it's impractical to let them control all the three in application development. And in terms of the set of values, one of the very important things that XP emphasizes is communication. I cannot overemphasize the benefit of communication, face-to-face communication, where people sit down together and write application, and where the users are reachable. They are either in the same room or in the next room, and you can go back and talk to them. And when I say user, I'm talking about customer representatives in application development. And simplicity is extremely important. The Yagni principle, you aren't going to need it, for example, by Ron Jeffries, emphasizes, you know, postponing things until you clearly understand you need some of these things. Simplicity is at the key. The feedback cycle is extremely critical. There are two types of feedback we really expect in agile development. The first feedback is the code doing what I, the programmer, expect the code to do? And we attain that from unit testing and functional testing, for example. The second is the application doing what is relevant to the customers? And we get that by frequent demo and letting them exercise the application. So feedback is extremely important in agile development. And the last one probably is even more important is courage. Courage is not to call the guy in the back of the room that he's tall and ugly. It is about taking the courage to say, you know what, my application code I just wrote, it stinks. I really overly complicated. I'm going to go back and redo this. Or I have no clue how I did this. I want to go, you know, learn better ways to do it. So courage is to take responsibility, to take ownership of things. And courage is extremely important in being successful in developing applications. And with all this, the practices that XP emphasizes is pair programming to emphasize constant code review, you know, constantly testing code using unit testing and refactoring the code constantly to evolve the design and to keep it very simple, having a set of metaphor to communicate your application details, and continuous integration where you constantly integrate your application and get feedback, and the planning game. So I'll talk about continuous integration for a second. I'm working with a client right now, brilliant, brilliant people. These guys wanted to be agile. They didn't know a lot of things, but they really were inclined to do it. So they had a number of very useful and critical questions as we went through it. But one of the really interesting things they did was they set up the machines, cruise control, and each person had a CCT running on, and they configured it such that whenever a build happens on the server, there's an audio feedback. And the build machine picks up the code and compiles it every 3 minutes. So it's pretty aggressive in terms of how frequently it compiles the code. When a build succeeds, we're in a war room, and all the machines in the war room, as soon as a build goes to the build machine, as soon as the build succeeds, all the machines almost synchronously will say, "Yeah!" And you will hear this, you know, sound throughout. It may appear a little silly, but one of the things I really liked about this was when about 30 minutes goes by and you haven't heard this yee-haw, you kind of wonder why nobody is actually checking in code, you know, what is happening. So it's a great feedback mechanism. But what's also interesting is when somebody checks in a code that breaks a build, in a very grim voice, it wakes up and says, you haven't learned a thing. It's very intimidating when the computer tells you that you're stupid, right? But tell you what, I would rather know that my code sucks from my computer than my coworker telling me that. So basically, the idea is to get this constant feedback and evolve your application code, and you take this extremely, you know, this goes back to the broken window concept that you may be familiar with, right? So the broken window concept basically says that the buildings with the broken window deteriorate the fastest. So that's one of the reasons why people board up these. And so you want to take your application code extremely serious. Don't let anybody trash your code in your application. And continuous integration works really extremely well in that regard. So basically, going on to the planning game and the small releases planning, metaphor for communication, very great emphasis on testing and simplicity. And also it emphasizes refactoring, like I mentioned, pair programming, collective ownership. One of the things that probably is interesting to think about is a 40-hour work week, not to work long hours more than 2 weeks. It is very ineffective to work long hours, and time and again we have seen this. I would rather work shorter hours and be more productive than work longer hours and be ineffective in doing it. So it's not the question of how long you work, but how much work you produce that makes a very big difference. And having customers on site to interact with them and following a set of coding standards so it becomes easier to communicate with the team. So the question is, what kind of culture really makes this work? Well, the first question is, you know, what kind of culture your team has? Does your boss expect you to be at work on Saturday afternoons? Is that more important to him than you actually producing working code? Do they require you to produce a lot of documentation versus actually developing code that works? A lot of these things have to be, you know, thought about. It's a cultural thing more than anything else that makes a big difference. Not every problem we face is a technical problem. A lot of these are human interaction problems that we need to be able to deal with. Also, the size of the team, typically about 10 to 20 people works really well, but if you're interested in working with a larger team, you certainly can do by properly dividing and conquering this, so it is doable. And also, the technology must, you know, make it possible for you to be agile and turn things around, otherwise it becomes very ineffective. And of course, the work environment makes a very big difference in your ability to produce results with these. Yes, please. Somebody, yeah. Go get another job. The important thing is this. It is our life. Your time and my time is extremely valuable. We want to be part of organizations where we can succeed and promote success. We don't deserve anything less. So if the organization is not willing to succeed, we need to go find organizations where they're willing to succeed. That's extremely important. We don't deserve anything less. And if an organization is not committed to being successful, why do we kid ourselves developing applications in such organizations, right? So we need to promote change where it is possible or go find places where we can be part of that. That's extremely important. XP works really well, and XP deals with programmer-level activities more than anything else. So it is something that is much more interesting and useful because of all the tactical things that XP deals with. The next thing I'll talk about here is Scrum. Now, interesting enough, one of the interesting papers by Alistair Coburn talks about the new methodology, and he challenges to think about whether software development is software engineering or is it more collective gaming. Well, that's something that stuck to my head quite a bit, and when I looked at Scrum, it's pretty interesting. The name Scrum, as some of you may realize, is actually an activity in rugby. So it is actually named after an activity in sport to emphasize that developing software is more collective gaming than anything else. So Scrum is a very interesting methodology, and what Scrum really emphasizes is a bit higher level, so it fits really well with project management-related activities. And I'll just take a pause here to emphasize something. As a result, I find it very effective to mix Scrum and XP together on projects. I don't normally like to use Scrum or XP. I mix them together on software projects because they really tag along to each other extremely well, covering the programmer-level activities to management-level activities together. So I mix and match them pretty well in projects. So Ken Swaber and Jeff Sutherland came up with this concept. And Scrum basically is where you expect the team to be extremely motivated, self-organized, and it's more like a cult-like attitude where they are really working towards succeeding in projects. And the Scrum Master, if I'm a Scrum Master, if my team is working here, I will be standing facing outside. The reason is my people, I'm trusting them. I don't have to be monitoring them. They will come and ask me if they need help. And the reason I'm facing outside is to keep the distractions away. I don't want anybody to touch my team and distract them. So a Scrum Master job is to isolate the team from the distractions, not from customers, but from distractions, so that they can spend the time developing this application. And Scrum basically emphasizes the sprint, which is the 30-day iteration cycle. And in Scrum, you start the day with what's called a Scrum or a Scrum meeting. In Scrum meeting, the developers form a circle, and each person typically says three things. What did I do yesterday? What am I going to do today? And what's holding me back? If I have to stand in front of my team and say what I did yesterday, I should have done something more useful than browsing the web. So it puts pressure. Peer pressure is really great. The shame factor works really nice, right? So I got to tell what I worked yesterday and what am I going to work on today. That brings back relevance. If I'm saying something that I'm going to work on, if that's not relevant or something is more high priority, we can discuss it right there. And what's holding me back? If there are blockers that I need to know, bring up, I can bring up those blockers and the team can help me resolve it depending on who needs to. And one of the nice things about the Scrum meeting is it is extremely short, about 10 to 15 minutes long. And people stand. And because you cannot stand for too long in a position without moving, you keep the meeting shorter. And nobody likes meetings, so why not just keep the meeting short and be very relevant? And if you really have to talk about something more, you don't have to involve the entire team. You can just talk to that very person later on. So Scrum meetings are a very effective way of doing this. And you maintain a backlog of your project. Backlog basically is not amount of time you spend, it's amount of effort that still is needed to finish in terms of time. And you constantly evolve this backlog in your application as you develop it. And you constantly keep focus on the sprint goal and find out what you think will be the success of your application that you're developing. So Scrum does not de-emphasize documentation. It says do as much or as little as you can get away with based on what you're trying to build in your application. And like I said, it's a self-directed, self-organized team. And you constantly demo to the stakeholders as you go through the iteration. And very adaptive planning is emphasized. No work is added to the iteration once you start iterating your through the iteration process. And also, you could use Scrum for little parts of your application to experiment and learn from it if you're interested in doing it. So basically, the emphasis is to come up with this spring iteration where you can go through a planning phase and constantly develop application and do adaptive planning going through the life cycle of the application. So some of the commitments or values are commitment, focus, a very intense focus by the team on developing the application, and more important, succeeding. Openness, almost extreme amount of openness to criticism. You can tell them whatever you like to, and they're going to tell you what they think about it, and you learn, you take the time to learn. Nobody is beyond the phase of learning. And what is respect? Respect is being on time, delivering what you promised to deliver on time. If you said that the code is going to be ready by Tuesday, you want to deliver Tuesday. If you think you cannot, immediately bring it to attention so you can seek help and keep people informed. And of course, we discussed courage already. So these are some of the core values that Scrum brings in. So like I mentioned, Scrum and XP are a great combination to work on software projects as they tend to be at different levels of emphasis in software projects. I'm not going to spend as much time on the remaining methodologies as I did with these two. I will highlight a couple of interesting things about each of these as we go through. EVO is probably one of the oldest iterative and agile development process developed as back as 1960. You know, one of the things you constantly would hear people say is, well, this will never work for large projects. I want you to go look up for some articles that say how NASA actually used iterative and incremental development and test-based development to build the software for the space shuttle. So this has been actually done very heavily in the 1970s, if you will. Agile development is not new at all. It is just that we are bringing more emphasis to it as time goes on. So we have been doing this for a long time, and different organizations have tried it to various levels in different time intervals. EVO emphasizes a short iteration of a week long or 5 days. And one of the interesting things about this is it recommends that we constantly evaluate the requirements and do what is relevant and deliver to the stakeholders very frequently. The rational unified process, I'm very skeptical putting it here, but one of the reasons I wanted to emphasize it is it's got a great emphasis on iterative and incremental development, but oftentimes people incorrectly may tend to use it as a very heavyweight, overly emphasizing documentation process. So oftentimes people associate this with heavyweight, but if done correctly and if you put really strong emphasis, you possibly could be agile with it, but takes quite an effort and discipline as well. The Crystal is actually a very interesting methodology. Alistair Coburn contributed to this, and his emphasis is this: no shoe fits all. If you're developing a game, a little game for children to play with, or maybe some people to play with in the spare time, what if your game messes up or crashes once in a while? The worst thing that's going to happen is somebody's going to cuss. So what's the big deal? Now, if you're building an application that is going to manage maybe my home finance and it crashes or misbehaves, well, I may lose a little money, but it's not going to kill me, right? But if I'm trying to manage the casino, well, that could result in a lot of loss of money. We got to be careful. What if I'm trying to build an application that is going to keep track of the space shuttle, and if it crashes, a lot of people get killed, both on the ground and the shuttle? Well, we want to be careful with it. So depending on what your impact of failure is, your development methodology has to change. That's what Coburn's Crystal methodology is. He asks us to think about the effect of failure in terms of the criticality. Is it just a loss of comfort? Is it just loss of essential money? Is it loss of discretionary money? Or is it life-threatening? And based on the consequence of the defect, we need to tailor our approach. And so he has come up with the different stages of this methodology, from clear to all the way through yellow, orange, and red. And the metaphorical implication here is, the harder the crystal is, the darker its color is, and the more emphasis in your methodology and practices. So you go from something extremely lightweight and clear to a little bit more structured, if you will, for lack of a better word, as you go through the other methodologies. So it's a pretty interesting methodology to look at. And so it emphasizes on this color variations to address the criticality of applications. And a lot of other regular Agile stuffs are part of it as well. So it emphasizes on personal safety, honesty, confidence in developing applications, being focused on developing the application, and then the regular emphasis on Agile stuff. And one of the interesting things here is the passive or osmotic knowledge acquisition, where you constantly interact with customers and developers to understand your details. One of the things I will not touch in this particular talk, but I like to mention here, is the concept of domain-driven design, for example, where you take the time to understand the domain, interact with your customers, and the emphasis is to understand what people are really trying to build and bring the relevance back to it is extremely important. And those kinds of things are very important to keep in mind when it comes to developing these applications. A lean development is another methodology, which is based on the Toyota's lean manufacturing process. The lean development basically is a strategic business down approach. So it is not really more of tactical things we do at the developer level, but very high business value and planning emphasis on this particular approach. It addresses some of the risk in the developing applications at the entrepreneurship level. And, of course, it has different phases in developing applications. So, like I said, it's something that's pretty high level in terms of its emphasis, more at the management level than at the low-level tactical level, if you will. But some of the really interesting principles here is that it emphasizes that everything is changeable. The concept of reversibility is extremely important. You don't want to paint yourselves in a corner developing applications architecturally or framework-wise or even other things that you do. Reversibility is extremely important in developing applications. It's got a great emphasis on that. Minimum is essential, and going to the emphasis of simplicity, if you will, and needs determine technology. That's gold. How many times have we decided technology without any regard to what we are trying to build? And sometimes people call this as RDD, resume-driven design. How many times people actually picked up technology because that'll make them get better jobs, not because that's the right solution for the job, problem on hand? So we need to, those are some of the emphasis that this brings. And of course, everything has its limits. Don't push it beyond that particular limit. Adaptive software development is yet another methodology out there. This is by Jim Highsmith and Sam Bayer. And basically, again, this emphasis is on speculative, collaborative, and learning cycles in developing applications, mission-focused, feature-based, iterative, time-boxed applications, and non-prescriptive in nature. That's, again, emphasis is you got to evolve things based on what you're trying to build in your application. So this is somewhat of a high-level approach, again. DSDM is not as popular in the U.S. as it is in Europe, and this basically emphasizes, and one of the things I like about this is this Moscow. Basically, it is where you take your requirements and you look at them from the point of view of must-have, should-have, could-have, and wants, and that's a way to prioritize what you're trying to build and place relevance on what you're trying to build. And again, emphasis on smaller teams to build applications, strong emphasis on different activities and phases in developing your application. And the last one I will just mention here is FDD, or feature-driven development. And some of the things that feature-driven development says is a bit controversial. But also there are a few agile things in it. So let's talk about both of those. It's a simple process, modeling, short iteration cycles. So you could say that's kind of emphasizing a bit of agility on it. Good people for domain knowledge can't argue with it. Expects requirements to be well captured and understood, not quiet. You know, how many applications fit into that category? Maybe a very few applications, that's a rewrite of applications, may fit in, but even there I found quite a number of things to change, so you can question that a little bit. And expects classes to be assigned to individuals. That is quite in contradiction to collaborative ownership we do in XP, where the team owns code, not any particular individual. So there are kind of, you know, conflicts a little bit here and there, but you could say that this also fits in for some of the recommendations it has in terms of agile development itself. So in terms of agile development, there are a number of these methodologies. Which one should we use? What makes actual sense? I want to kind of review some of the things and thoughts about it. I'll come back to it after I quickly summarize some of this, and then I'll open up for some questions and answers. So in terms of ceremony and iteration cycle, competency level and emphasis, I want to kind of compare some of these things. So in terms of ceremony, a ceremony is when you have to do certain things religiously and repetitively. By the way, ceremony is not bad. Agile development does have ceremony. But generally, when we use the word ceremony here, we tend to talk about documentation emphasis more than anything else, or emphasis on creating design documents and so on. But agile development has ceremony on its own. For example, you meet every day for a stand-up meeting. What is that other than being ceremony? So there are some good ceremonies and bad ceremonies, and we need to pick the ones that actually work for us. In terms of the, you know, not so effective ceremonies, you can think about this as Scrum basically doesn't have as much ceremony. XP has probably the least, and Evo. And in terms of iteration cycle, XP has a 2 to 3 week iteration cycle. Scrum generally emphasizes a month. And what is a good iteration cycle? Let's talk about time boxing for a second. Generally speaking, about 2 to 6 weeks is a reasonable time. But whether 2 weeks is right or 6 weeks is right is up to you based on your project needs. I would say less than 2 weeks becomes a bit hard, though I've tried 1 week on certain projects effectively on shorter duration projects. And beyond 6 weeks, it becomes pretty ineffective. But whatever is your comfort zone, pick that particular iteration cycle. But once you do, time boxing basically says that you repeat the same interval over and over, it becomes easier to plan and also manage the project. In time boxing, you're not emphasizing everything should be done by the day. What you're emphasizing is whatever is not done is carried to the next iteration for planning purposes, and you very clearly time box it. Another thing I will emphasize is, in iterative development, it is not an iteration padded by the next iteration, padded by the next iteration. That's not effective. Between these two iterations, you want to give a few hours to a couple of days for what's called retrospective. It's like the, you know, it's like the silence in the music note. That's the fun part, right? So you take this a day and a half to 2 days, whatever that you give, and you do the retrospective and planning for the next iteration, and that's very critical time in the iteration cycle as well in developing this application. And then, of course, in terms of competency level, I generally find that agile methodologies succeed better when we have competent people. You may agree that that's true for almost everything we do, but agile methodologies bring this to exposure very quickly. We find out what works and what doesn't work very quickly. It exposes things very, very rapidly. In terms of competency level, Alistair Coburn talks about three levels of competency, the beginner or the follower, and then he talks about the detaching and then the fluent level. And also the emphasis by Dreyfus model, where we have level 1 to level 5, where level 1 is the beginner novice and level 5 is the expert. Each one of us is in different levels based on what we are trying to do, right? You may be an expert in software development, but maybe a novice in scuba diving, for example. So it depends on what your level is in different things we do. There's no one expert and one novice in everything we do in life. And the last thing I will compare here is on various activities, iterative cycle, 2 to 3 week in XP to 30-day iteration in Scrum, and so on. And then, of course, the customer participation, very strong emphasis on most of those, very strong emphasis on test-driven development in most of those, and business process involvement, not so much in XP, to a very high level in unified process, for example. Team size, small to medium, is more effective. A ceremony level varies depending on what you're trying to do, and a list of features, if you will, that I've emphasized based on XP emphasizing pair programming, collective ownership, strong customer participation, and so on, through Scrum where you have backlogging and Scrum meetings and so on. and the number of practices that may be applicable to things we do. So to kind of round up a couple of things, I want to emphasize, you know, which practice makes the most sense? Well, I would say the first and foremost thing to remember is it's important to succeed in software development more than anything else. So I'll share with you a quick story about one of my recent experience. I was called on I was in my office one day. I get a call, and one of my customers calls me and says, "Hey, we got a problem. We got a project that's ongoing. We are into the project about 4 months, and I think we're failing, and we want you to come in and help." And I said, "Well, let me look up my schedule." And he said, "No, I don't want you to look at the schedule. I want you to hang up, reserve the ticket, fly tonight, and be here at 8 in the morning." So I was like, okay, the emphasis is clear. So I go there the next morning, and I find out that they are in a project. They are 4 months into it, total of 8 months for the project. And I ask him how much he has done, and he says that he's about, 5 to 10% complete, whereas the 50% of time has elapsed. And I found that the team is actually pretty good. They are interested in succeeding, but too many things were going on. They were not very effective at all. And they said, "What can you do to help?" I said, "The first thing is, I'm not a magician. I may come on board. I may actually work with you guys, and we may still fail. I cannot guarantee success, but I will try the best I can if you guys want to work with me." And they said, "Yeah, let's go ahead and try it." And what we did was, I could have told them, "You know what, I'm a big fan of agility, and I cannot believe doing anything without test-driven development, so let's start testing." Well, the problem is the team doesn't know what test-driven development is. They've never used, any unit testing tool. And if I started them on unit testing, a month will go by before they become effective with it, so I would have actually helped them killing the project. My goal is there not to help them kill the project, but my goal is to help them with the project. So I did not, really emphasize on test-driven development in that project at that time. The goal was to get it wrapped up in the next 4 months we had. And an analogy I want to point to you is, the doctor's office, maybe in the hospital, somebody is being brought in, and he's on the gurney or stretcher, and the guy is holding on to his chest, and he says that he's got a chest pain. Well, the doctor could tell him, "If only you had exercised and eaten well, you wouldn't be here, so get your butt off and get onto the treadmill." Well, that would kill him, obviously, right? So the doctor has to first administer, stabilize this guy, put him on a good regimen, and then, bring him back to exercising. And that's extremely important. The goal is not to do agile. The goal is to succeed on projects. So in this particular project I was talking about, the first thing I did was we brought in a weekly demo. So we had a weekly iteration and a weekly demo where the customers would see what we are developing. And the second thing we did was that we started introducing a stand-up meeting every morning so the team can understand what's going on and discuss and bring things into the open. And the third thing we did was they did not quite have an effective tracking system to keep track of task and priority, and we brought that in. With just these three and a lot of hard work, we actually completed this application 2 weeks ahead of schedule, and we were able to succeed with it. So if you ask me what was the reason for success was the team was extremely willing and eager to succeed, and that was the reason for success, not the tools, but the people that made the difference. So the goal is not to be agile. The goal is to succeed on software projects, and some of these things help a great deal if applied to the right dose on projects that we develop. So keep the emphasis on that in developing applications, and we can certainly succeed in developing software projects. So I'm open for any questions, comments that you may have, please. Go ahead. Gentleman over here on the left, thank you.
Hey.
Yep.
It works. Why? I have a question. Nowadays people start to either trying to leverage different kind of tools to either help the project management or to facilitate the communication, like the wiki, the internet forum, and all these other automated testing tool. How do you think the importance and of those tools in terms to help the agile development?
The question is, which are important tools for agile development? There's a saying that says, a fool with a tool is a dangerous fool. So we cannot throw tools and expect success. It's the people who make the difference, the craftsmen that make the difference. On projects that I worked on, we tend to effectively use Post-it notes is one of the greatest tools we have found to be effective. we would be in a war room, and you can have a wall with butcher paper, for example, to hold on to the sticky notes. And we stick notes. Post-it is the first tool we use. And then we communicate a lot. We are there in a room. We speak to each other a lot. We walk down, sit down with each other, and communicate effectively. Then comes the wikis, where the wikis help us to, you know, exchange ideas and put things. And in a certain way, that turns into a form of documentation that we can, you know, show later on as how things have evolved. In terms of project management, Post-it notes serves quite a bit for most of what we do. We're not really big on investing into tools, but there are tools like, for example, Xplanner that you could look at, and there's other tools in the market that, commercial tools also. But tools have not given us the best benefit. The tools that we heavily rely upon are not quite project management tools, but integration tools like unit testing, cruise control, or flavors of that for continuous integration and so on. Maybe some for mock objects and so on. Those have been a lot more effective. We have kind of kept it extremely lightweight when it comes to project management tools, leaning more towards communication and face-to-face interaction, and then not so much on tools. But certainly, if you have distributed team, take a look at some of these tools like Xplanner or Rally version 1, and ThoughtWorks has also a Mingle product that's coming out and so on. You can take a look at some of these tools. But the emphasis is not on tool. Tool comes in later than people and process itself. Go ahead, please.
How you doing? The question I have is we are adapting Scrum, and some of the things that I've noticed with the stand-up meetings, I mean, as much as you try to do the 10 minutes or whatever, they eventually evolve into people talking about, I mean, people like to talk is what I find. They want to talk about the problems that they experience. They might, you mentioned the shame factor. Well, what it really turns into is, kind of excuses or this kind of thing, and then talking through their problems or whatever. One question is I have is, how do you manage that? And then the second question is how do you take what you get, from that, the burn down charts and so forth, and communicate that back properly with project management, who are really not looking at burn charts. They're more interested in project, Microsoft project, and this kind of thing.
So this is about the Scrum meeting that your question related to. One of the things is that's where the Scrum Master is a very important role. And it's important to remind people and emphasize this. So one of the things we do is clearly say that people have to be on time for the meeting. There's no point in waiting 15 minutes to start a 10-minute meeting, for example, right? So you start on time. And again, that's where the respect comes in. And when people start talking, very politely, the Scrum Master plays an extremely important role by making sure that the emphasis is done on proper things. One of the other things we also do, I'm glad you brought this up. It's hard to cover all of that in an hour, but I'll touch on things that come up in the questions. But it's a very relevant question. So one of the things we do is, if you ask me at the end of a day or end of a week or end of an iteration what my pain point was, I'm not going to remember those things, and I don't care as much. So one of the things we emphasize is, at the middle of the day while we are working as a group, we hit on something that's pretty problematic, or sometimes we hit on things that are pretty cool. So what we do is we maintain the wall where there are two areas, what works and what hurts, right? And during the day, we constantly encourage people to walk up and list those things. So in the Scrum meeting the next day, those become bullet points to start talking about, and we don't expand on too many things, but highlight very quickly and move on so the Scrum Master can emphasize some of those. And some of the items we list there also get carried to the retrospective that we take to the end of the iteration cycle. So some of them are good things we want to repeat. Some of the things are not good things we may want to talk about right away, some tactical things, or something that can be taken to the retrospective, or certain things that you may want to carry on for other activities can come back also. But usually, with the emphasis of the Scrum Master, asking people to prompt. Other thing I've also noticed is anything blocking you, one guy will say no, and I would have to kind of, elbow and say, hey, the problem we had yesterday. It's like, oh, yeah. And then you kind of help others also. It's not only that they say sometimes more, but they also forget to say sometimes, and you want to bring emphasis to that. But it once people understand the purpose of this, they tend to quite get beneficial about this. Attitude makes extreme difference in the success of this, and so coaching the people towards that is very critical. But good attitude and good, I hate to use the word management, but good, team leadership, it becomes very effective in doing that. The second part of the question, what was it? Right, sorry, yeah. So basically, it is to quickly take that and mark it down for action rest of the day or rest of the week if possible. Otherwise, move into retrospective so it's not missed, and then you can come back and take a look at it. Again, the emphasis is not on the tool, but to pay attention to it. And usually the person with the pain point remembers to go back and pull it and bring it back to the table if needed. Absolutely. I'll hang around if you have questions. I'll be glad to talk to you. Thank you.